Thank you, Marshall. If you will open court, please.
Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Reyes, Judge Larson, Judge Ead. The Honorable Peter M. Reyes, Jr. presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Wednesday, January 17th, 2024. We have three cases on our calendar today set for oral argument via Zoom. The first one of which is A23-0522, Lee versus Callis et al. The parties will have 15 minutes each for the initial arguments, followed by 5 minutes for appellant for rebuttal. This is being live streamed. It is also being recorded. However, no other recordings are permitted for this hearing. The recording will be available to all parties within a day or two after our oral arguments here today. All other rules of decorum apply to this, other than you don't have to worry about standing up and there's no podium to go in front of at all, of course. We certainly appreciate you participating in this oral argument via Zoom. And for each party, when you begin, please state your name for the record and the party you are representing. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Michael D. Ditburner, and I represent the appellant Leslie Lee, to whom I shall refer to as mother, and I shall refer to the respondent as father. The issue presented in this appeal is whether Venmo transactions between a child support obligor and obligee can allow a district court to retroactively modify a child support award by deeming such transactions to create a binding agreement for child support modification. The basic facts of this case are: the court ordered basic support award stemming from an August 2, 2013 modification order was $1,182 per month, which included a subsequent cost of living adjustment from the $1,145 court ordered amount. In November of 2015, father's payments through Venmo were reduced to $1,000 per month. Then in June of 2019, they were further reduced to $500 per month. The child support office supervisor determined that the difference between what was owed and what was paid totaled $32,259. This determination of arrearages was negated by Magistrate Davidson's January 12, 2023 order, which directed the Title IV-D agency's records to be corrected to show that no basic support was owed by father through March 31, 2022. The law in this area is clear. As per this court's decision in 1987 in Omak v. Omak, children have non-bargainable interests in child support, and child support may not be waived. Section 518A.39, subdivision 2F, bars modification of support prior to service of a motion unless the parties enter into a binding agreement for an alternative effective date. In Darcy v. Darcy, this court held that forgiveness of arrearages is considered a retroactive modification of support. In Dent v. Kasaga, a 1973 case, the Minnesota Supreme Court held that a decree providing for child support payments must be enforced until a modification has been ordered by the court.
So, counsel, would you agree then that you reference the fact that you could have an agreement by the parties to have a different date of enforcement? In other words, you can have an extrajudicial agreement to modify child support if two criteria are met. One, it's contractually sound, and two, it is fair and reasonable to all the parties. Is that a fair statement of the law?
That is a fair statement of the law, which is stated in Keeley versus Keeley, in which this court did hold for that, that if it's contractually sound and otherwise fair and reasonable. And Keeley says that to be contractually sound, the agreement must be supported by consideration. In order to be fair and reasonable, the Keeley court also said that it cannot create an adverse impact on children. It must be supported by full disclosure, and it should not complicate future proceedings. And so the application of the law to the facts of this case demonstrates that the district court erred in deeming respondent not to be in arrears.
Well, so you can, so in other words, counsel, so in other words, you can have an implied contract. In fact, if there, in essence, there's an offer, there's an acceptance and consideration. And here, would you agree that there was an offer? You had mother who sent a Venmo request for $1,000 monthly payment, and father responded back by making those payments for just under 7 years, correct?
There was a request made for payment, and then father responded with a payment.
Okay.
However, the issue is this a binding agreement? First of all, there is no consideration. Also, there's no agreement with respect to children's living arrangements, which was something that the Crippis Court held in 1990 that you have to have.
Well, but don't you have consideration here under at least two reasons? One is that the parties wanted to, rather than having to go to court, they wanted to reach an agreement between the two of them. And then second, that this would allow the father to have more time to spend with the children. So aren't those two valid considerations to support the agreement reached between the parties? Not ha and particularly not having to go back to court, saving costs that way.
Well, the problem with that notion, Your Honor, is that the court also stated on the record at the December 28th hearing that there had been no meeting of the minds. And as far as consideration is concerned, if all you have are Venmo transactions, because the magistrate rejected the notion of these different types of drafts of agreements the parties had as creating any kind of agreement, and the district court based it solely on the Venmo transactions. Without that, you then have no consideration. You just have the Venmo transactions as evidence. And
Counsel, you're not addressing the point that I made in terms of the consideration, but I do want to address the issue that you raised in terms of the initial contracts that went back and forth, draft contracts. Isn't that just part of the negotiation process? And the Venmo transactions indicate the final agreement between the parties?
well, if you're going to view that as creating consideration, Your Honor, you also have to take a look at the fact that that never happened.
What
It
never
never
happened?
happened that the father was going to visit the children in Minnesota. He did not do that.
But th that's an after the fact issue. What we're talking about here is the initial contract creation as to whether or not there is consideration to support that initial contract
Okay.
formation.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. But the problem is that it's not fair to the children to have the support reduced in this instance. There was no disclosure of the father's income at the time that these Venmo transactions occurred. And then if we get to 2019, when it was
What does
further
that
reduced.
matter, though, in terms of the disclosure of what father's exact income was? The issue is whether or not the parties are going to agree to a certain child support payment amount, which it appears that the parties did with their Venmo request by mother. And not only did she acknowledge that in the affidavits, but also in the testimony, as well as father accepting that by making those payments month after month, year after year.
Because Keeley holds that there has to be full disclosure. And if you fail to disclose your income as part of an agreement to modify child support that's extrajudicial, that has to be fatal to the agreement in and of itself. And this is especially the case in 2019,
Does that go to
when.
prong two, counsel, the fairness and reasonableness? So, setting aside whether a contract had formed, does this portion of your argument go to prong two of whether or not that contract was fair and reasonable? Or is your argument that because he didn't disclose, there was lack of contract formation?
Well, I think it goes more towards whether this is a fair and reasonable agreement, Your Honor, because if we take a look at what the Keeley Court said that you have to have, and that was a case involving spousal maintenance, it wasn't even involving in child support. And child support's based on the non-bargainable interests of children. And so if you have people that are unrepresented by counsel, who don't show any kind of solemnity and seriousness of purpose with regard to entering into an agreement, all it is based on Venmo transactions and then, the parties' varying drafts of agreements, you are clearly not being fair to children. And with the failure to disclose, especially in 2019, which was not part of the 2015 agreement, father at that time is making over $450,000 per year. And to not
How
disclose
much did mother
income,
make? How much did mother make at that time, according to the court?
I believe about 200,000.
Okay, so And the district court found that she was not working as much as she could, correct?
I believe there is a reference in the findings to that, Your Honor.
Right. So she's making approximately $200,000 a year, working 2 days a week. She acknowledged she could have worked at least 3 days a week, if not full time. So if we're talking about the fairness, fair and reasonable second part of that test, how is that less of a payment of approximately, $150 or so a month? How is that not fair and reasonable when mother is already making roughly $200,000 as well?
And well, I cannot believe that that would be viewed as fair and reasonable when you have no disclosure. I mean, if you have no disclosure, looking at just the obligee's income, that's still not fair, because what would she have done in 2015? You know, had she known that he was making a lot more than he was, but she did not know what his income was.
Well, we look at four different factors to determine whether or not it was fair and unreasonable. And of course, one of the factors is looking at the income of the parties and whether or not that reduction in that child support payment would adversely affect the children. So I agree with you in terms of that certainly is a factor, but it's not the only factor, nor is it the overriding factor. And it would appear that because both parties had certainly adequate income to support the children, that one of the factors is we also look at the burden on the state. There would not be any burden on the state for the child to have to seek public assistance, which is factor number three. So that seems to be a factor that indicates that this small reduction, the district court referred to it as a minimal change. Wouldn't that be something that would ultimately be fair and reasonable then?
No, I cannot believe that it would be fair and reasonable to countenance a reduction in child support. And there is case law out there that says that children are entitled to be benefit from the income of both parents, not a single parent. And when you have one parent who's making a significant amount of money, who is not disclosing the amount of money that he's making at the time that the parties enter into agreement, you know, that has to be fatal to viewing an agreement as being binding. And none of this analysis of Keeley was performed by the district court in reaching a conclusion that Venmo transactions would suffice to create a binding agreement.
Do we have
Aren't
any?
you?
Oh, go
Go
ahead.
ahead. Oh, I was just going to ask you, counsel. You keep framing the evidence as limited to the Venmo transactions, but I agree that it's the totality of the evidence that was before the district court, right? Then that would include the testimony of the parties and the draft contracts that were exchanged, and all of that is what went towards the court's determination that the parties had reached an agreement and that there was consideration, right?
Well, Magistrate Davidson found in paragraph 83 of the findings that the unsigned draft of agreements did not reflect any agreement between the parties. And on the record, she said, okay, there's clearly no meeting of the minds about an agreement to reduce child support.
And I
That's what she
understand
said on
that.
December 28th.
My question is, if it was just the Venmo payment standing alone, or just the draft agreement standing alone, or just the testimony standing alone, perhaps there would be a lack of evidence to support the conclusion of the district court, or that would be clearly erroneous. But why wasn't it appropriate for the district court to look at all that information together in its totality and coming to its conclusion?
The district court did not make any kind of finding that the unsigned drafts of agreements support that were part of the whole agreement. The district court did not do that. They relied solely on the Venmo transactions to reach that conclusion. And in addition, when you're talking about fairness, let's also take a look at in 2019, when the reduction of support occurred from $1,000 to $500 per month,
Counsel, I have one
Magistrate.
other question about fairness. Do we have any case law that says that the district court needs to make specific findings about the fairness and reasonableness of this contract? Because I do think that one of the ways that this case is complicated from an appeal perspective is that we don't really have any findings from the district court as to what the fairness or reasonableness of the contract that they did find was formed, that we don't have any actual findings from either the magistrate or the district court as to that fairness. So, do we have any cases that are analogous to that, either precedential or non-precedential?
What you have is this Keeley versus Keeley case, which says that the district courts must consider these four different factors. I take that as a holding that you have to have findings as to that. And I do want to address one thing, Your Honor,
Well,
in terms of paragraph 81 of the
counsel, I want to stop you there. If the district court has to consider, we have case law in other situations. If, as long as the district court basically says, it considered the information before it, that's enough, and that it doesn't necessarily have to be put in writing.
I think that this court in Keeley versus Keeley set up clear ground rules as to what must be considered. And I just really want to highlight paragraph 81 of the findings. Magistrate Davidson noted that in 2019, when this further reduction occurred, the parties mistakenly believed that child support automatically reduces as an older child emancipates. So you have a finding that's inconsistent with finding that this is fair and reasonable to have a further reduction from $1,000 per month to $500 per month. And if this court is to countenance this type of agreement as being binding in this particular situation, we are off to the races. And you're going to have child support magistrates having to engage, it's supposed to be a simplified, expedited process, in all these different examinations of what factors went into these types of agreements. And so I would say that Keeley requires there to be findings in this instance, and the failure to make findings has to be fatal. But even getting to that, if you take a look at everything overall, this is not fair and reasonable to the children. And Magistrate Davidson limited her inquiry solely to whether or not there was a Venmo request followed by a Venmo payment. She
Thank you,
didn't base
counsel.
it on anything else.
Thank you, counsel. And you've run over your time limit, but you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you also will have 15 minutes. Please be cognizant that there is a timer in one of the musical squares here. Feel free to begin and please state your name for the record and the party you are representing.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel, attorney for respondent Travis Kalis. This case is unique in some sense, factually. And so I wanted to clear up maybe some of what I perceive to be inaccuracies as to suggestions of findings on the record in terms of the magistrate did. I mean, I was in the hearing. The magistrate, you know, the record and the transcript, we started the hearing and she makes a whole bunch of statements that seem to suggest she doesn't want to find a binding agreement. We end up trial counsel, we take a break and then we come back on the record and then take the rest of the evidence. So from an appellate review standpoint, the record, that really is discounted in the ultimate findings significantly by the magistrate, meaning the magistrate's initial comments and then her final order express her challenges with kind of her initial thoughts and then how this transpired. But for review purposes, she finds a valid and binding agreement, and that's for this court's review, the relevant and important finding. Now, does the record have enough evidence to support it? And I think it's complicated what the standard of review. Standard of review, perhaps, really, and it might be a hybridized standard of review. What is it? If we look at the fundamentals, as Your Honor pointed out, is this contract is valid and binding. We're not looking deep into the consideration. Was there consideration? Yes, there was. There was an exchange of money, time, parenting time, And whether or not it happened isn't the issue. Was there a bargain for exchange?
What evidence do we have that they actually had a meeting of the minds as to what the consideration would be? Because I think that it is challenging when you have these two competing written documents. It seems that mother and father continue to dispute what they actually agreed to outside of what actually occurred. And so what can you just point me to what the actual evidence is in the record outside of the non-signed agreements as to what the meeting of the minds was in terms of what mother would get in exchange for reducing these payment amounts?
And we don't have a perfect record because I don't think there is a perfect record of you know, full transparency. We don't have a full signed document, but I don't think that's required. But to kind of elaborate on...
But in normal contract law, I mean, so taking this out of the family law context, if you're going to find an implied contract, you do have to have evidence to support that there was a meeting of the minds in terms of what the consideration was the other party would get. And I think that in this case, the fact that mother was making the offer through Venmo and father was accepting it by paying is a pretty clear offer and acceptance as to how the Venmo app works. But I do find it challenging just based on general principles of contract law to see where the record actually shows what the consideration was for that reduced dollar amount.
It's the travel arrangements for the parenting time. So
does mother agree in the record that that was the consideration for the reduced amounts?
It wasn't phrased that way, but yes. I mean, she agrees. So the question is, does she agree to the facts underlying the consideration, right? We weren't having, this is expedited process. This isn't contract lawyers with contract law. Neither is a magistrate evaluating this with the, is this consideration? I think the question is it bargained for exchanged? And the issue is yes. I mean, the bargain for exchange, not just the offer and acceptance, but what are we exchanging? And the exchangement was Mr. Kalis, who actually came and would fly, I think, from Arizona to Minnesota on all these different dates and times, spending thousands of dollars to go and see the children, is the bargain for exchange. In fact, what Ms. Mother repeatedly would say in the hearing is he needs to come, he needs to see his kids, and she's upset that he wasn't coming. Well, just because my client or Mr. Kalis maybe may or may not have breached. What's not clear in the record is I think he felt denied in his parenting time, but that isn't an analysis for this court.
And isn't it also not just the parenting time issue, but just to exclude county involvement altogether? And that would not only come from the exchange draft agreements, but from the testimony at the hearing that your client gave?
Yeah. Secondarily, they said I think my client particularly says we agreed to take it out of the county system. That was their point. They wanted out of the payment system, the county system, and the county involvement. And I think that was also mutually agreed upon. I don't think
I understand that this is the family law context, but we are required under Kiley to show that this contract was contractually sound, which to me says that we have to apply general principles of contract law as to whether there was actual consideration. And so I guess I'm interested in what in the record points to mother and father mutually agreed he will have a reduced payment amount, and in exchange mother was getting what?
Father coming more.
And mother agrees to that on the record, that that's what the consider. Can you point me to where in the record that is?
It's in her statements, in her testimony, that you have to review this from the it's the defensiveness of the testimony, right? We don't, in cross-examination of a hostile witness, we don't get friendly testimony, which is, of course, I agreed to that, right? She's heavily prepared for this hearing by counsel. So what she says, to your point, to infer that evidence, is she says, I'm upset that he wasn't coming, which meant she agreed that he was coming. So it's very clear. She says, absolutely, I agreed to this contract and he breached it. So her statements on being upset as to the breach is the very basis that consideration was clear and agreed upon and was sound. Mother never comes back and says that that we didn't agree on this, or this, we didn't agree on the exact terms. In fact, I hit her on cross repeatedly, and she keeps going to the breach. She never comes back and disagrees as to the statements of, well, you wrote this, you wrote the emails, you sent them, you exchanged them. And
but
all
I think the burden is on you to show that there was consideration. The burden isn't on her, right?
Sure. And the, or I suppose, and the district court agreed, and I think the record reflects that. I don't think it's a, I suppose, super clear case because we don't have signatures, which was the magistrate's initial comments, right? If I don't have a signature, I don't want to do it. I mean, that just makes it crystal clear, I suppose, but we have a pattern of a repeated pattern of conduct, a lack of mothers doing anything about fathers. Either, of course, she agreed to all of his payments for 7 years. She never held him in contempt, never sought to modify parenting time, never complained through this process. And then when questioned, she doesn't dispute that that was the purpose in the process. So do we have a valid contract? Well, absolutely. It would, in any other context in civil contract law, I don't think a district court would, for example, two parents or two partners in a business or doing anything for 7 years, making the payments and doing something, and then coming back and said, well, 7 years ago, you didn't do something the way I wanted you to, would find the contract invalid for lack of consideration. That consideration was the activities of the parties, and simply making an excuse for 7 years later and being unsatisfied isn't really a basis to undo it under contract principles. I don't have a case on point. Of course, this is messy family law. You know, that's just what it is. And, but to the larger point, I think Healy and Minnesota law is this contractually fair and reasonable? And I think some of those highlighted points, we have intelligent people. We have money, we have educated, we have high incomes, we have transportation arrangements. And what's interesting is they got along pretty well. I mean, that's one of the larger interesting things here, is that the lack of litigation in the meantime for 7 years, this only comes up where does the objection come from? That's a struggle I always had with this case. Why did 7 years later, a comment to the county worker trigger the county to retroactively impose $35,000 of arrears?
May I interrupt you for a moment? Was there a specific finding by the child support magistrate regarding consideration? I do see that in Judge Goggins' order denying the motion for review, Judge Goggins concluded that the parties made an agreement based on the magistrate receiving the Venmo payment history and the Word document and email showing that the parties made an agreement. That's where Judge Goggins says, just because your client didn't exercise parenting time doesn't negate that the agreement happened or that both parties agreed to it, which I read to, you know, essentially be a conclusion about or finding about consideration. And it indicates to me that the district court implicitly credited your client's testimony during the hearing. But did the child support magistrate make a specific finding about consideration, excluding the county involvement and parenting time?
I don't believe that necessarily she's using those words expressly, but I think when a court is in a reviewing context, this is that kind of review, is there sufficient evidence to support the conclusion behind a valid contract formation? And the answer is yes. And I think you have to look at the totality of the findings of the magistrate as to not only crediting the agreement, crediting the behaviors. And so is there an express finding that this exactly is the consideration? I don't think so. But it doesn't preclude this court from affirming on the totality of all the statements that are involved.
Don't we review whether there is a valid contract de novo?
Yes. That's the Keeley would say whether that was formed. But that was that interesting part of the two prongs. So is it fair and reasonable? And I think that the fear I have is that this court will take a back-end review, meaning it will look at the fair and reasonableness and take that and implicitly try and take a de novo review. I don't think the fair and reasonableness kind of element appears to me to be on that, whether was this unreasonable or arbitrary from a standard of review perspective. So if we're looking at that, well, was it arbitrary for the court or was it unreasonable for the district court or the magistrate to show that this was fair and reasonable? But if we're viewing the consideration in the lens or the concept of the lens of, well, the consideration really wasn't reasonable, and then therefore I'm going to review the fair and reasonableness under a de novo would be an improper review from this court. So that's the
theory. Yeah, I'm just pointing to, I guess I'm just pointing to the, I think prong one of Keeley, whether it's contractually sound, is, I think everyone agrees, is de novo review. That we're required to look at the record and see, was there an offer, acceptance, and consideration in order to meet prong one, regardless of the district court's findings under a de novo standard.
It appears to say that generally reviewing of the validity of a contract is de novo. So,
and I mean, and I understand what you're saying in terms of once we get into, was the contract fair and reasonable, we start to get more into the scope of factual findings and credibility and things of that nature. And so maybe it's not the same kind of de novo review, but as to prong one, I think it's pretty clear that our review is de novo.
Sure. And I think that, I suppose that it's always a challenge when there, you don't have the exact finding, but what imagine would this court do on review if the district court or the magistrate said, I find adequate consideration, but don't.
Oh, I think either way we have de novo review.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
So the absence of the finding doesn't really preclude our review of that issue.
Yeah, that's correct. And I think when you look at all the attachments and the exhibits that come in together with the testimony, you get to see that the parties weren't really disputing what happened and didn't dispute why they did it. And the dispute, and that's kind of why I point at as how do you read hostile testimony on cross as to the affirmation of a credibility of a witness as to consideration? Because if you dive down, there's and that's kind of the response by mother, you can read into it by saying, well, I really didn't agree to it, but I did. And that's what she will say. Well, yes, 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 yes to my questions. And that's the same thing with the parenting time. So the two pieces.
Counsel, sorry to interrupt, but we have less than a minute left. And yes, I have a concern about on the fair and reasonable prong, the second prong. We don't have any findings of fact by the district court to even review, assuming for the sake of argument that it's clear error review of those findings. What do we make of that? Doesn't that require us to remand for further findings by the district court as to whether or not those at least four factors that need to be considered should be evaluated?
I suppose that would be my favorite if I were the opposing attorney, my response, right? We always want to review and remand, but is the evidence sufficient in the record to make that determination? Yes. I mean, that's really the question. Do you have a sufficient enough information in order for the court, based on the findings it did made and based on the totality of the record, is there enough? And I think your Honor pointed much of that out in your own questions.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Oh, you're on mute, sir.
In this discussion of contractual soundness, we're focusing on what happened in 2015. And whether there was consideration in 2015. But I think we can all agree that there is absolutely zero consideration for the agreement in 2019, for any kind of agreement in 2019, to further reduce the support from $1,000 to $500 per month.
But didn't the lack of county involvement still continue at that point? I mean, that's part of what the argument is, that there was consideration, not just, you know. And then continued parenting time, I suppose, without involving the county, even if he's not exercising it. Why shouldn't that still hold as valid consideration for the renegotiation in 2019?
Because the parties' varying drafts of the agreement did not provide for a further reduction from $1,000 to $500 per month. That would take up.
Well, they didn't provide for $1,000 to begin with, right? I mean, the drafts, that was your point. I thought the drafts exchanged didn't evidence a meeting of the minds, because what actually was borne out in the Venmo transactions was not what the parties were negotiating exactly in the drafts. So I don't know how that that helps. I mean, I think the idea, and this was my question, and looking again at Judge Goggins' order, I understand that, you know, you've argued that the child support magistrate viewed this as being only the contract as being only evidenced by the Venmo transaction. But when Judge Goggins looked at it, Judge Goggins looked at both what the Venmo transactions were in conjunction with what the draft agreements had exchanged as apparently the background of the agreement. So what's your response to that? Why was that error by Judge Goggins?
By 2019, no visits are occurring. So the idea that somehow there would be contact by father with the children in a way that would satisfy mother, that's not happening. So there is zero consideration in 2019 for this agreement, and nobody can deny that. I mean, that's on the record.
So your argument is that there's two different contracts here, potentially? There was one contract potential.
Yeah.
There's one potential contract in 2015 and there's one potential contract in 2019. And there's not a fair reading of this to say that there was a contract in 2015 that said there would be a reduced amount.
Yeah. Even if you were to say that there's a contract in 2015, that there's consideration, you have zero consideration and zero contractual soundness in 2019. And that's the reduction
is this,
to
is this a new front. Argument? Is this a new argument? I'm not sure I discern this argument from your briefing at all, either in your principal brief or your reply brief, that there are two separate contracts. Can you help me out and point to where in your briefing you made that argument?
I'm pretty sure I do, Your Honor. I mean, on page 5 of my reply brief, I state at the top of page 5, even if a commitment to visit the children is viewed as part of the bargain for an agreement to reduce support in 2015, it is not part of any bargain to further reduce father's child support obligation to $500 per month as of June 2019, when years without father visiting the children had already passed. Neither party's unsigned written drafts in 2015 mentioned that support would be $500 per month 4 years later. So I
but,
do address.
But why wasn't it consideration to mother not to have to go back to court to involve the county in father asking for a modification because one of the children is emancipated? Why was that not a benefit? Why wasn't that consideration? She got $500 every time she asked without having to do any litigation.
There's nothing in the record to support that is consideration. There's no finding by the court. There's no finding on the Healy factors.
Did father testify as to consideration in 2019?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I don't think he offered any kind of testimony on that.
Because I think that the question is there a credibility determination here where the child support magistrate is crediting father's testimony regarding not having to go to court and discrediting your client's testimony that there was no consideration? I think that's the question.
There was no credibility determination made by the district court and its findings by the magistrate or the district court judge that affirmed the magistrate's decision.
But didn't father testify that both parties wanted to handle the arrangement between themselves to avoid the involvement by the county?
What benefit would no involvement by the county have for mother? I mean,
reduction in terms of cost for both parties would be one of the benefits, certainly, and not being tied up in litigation.
She would have the support of the county in that event, and that's a benefit to her. So she's receiving zero benefit.
You know, right, but both parties would not have to incur legal fees or court costs by not having to go. And case law certainly supports parties going outside and having extrajudicial agreements simply for that reason. But I wanted to go back to your argument of, you noted in your reply brief, but we don't take into consideration new arguments made in the reply brief. Plus, I just want to highlight quickly that on on paragraph 84 of the district court's findings, they noted that the parties reached a mutual agreement that the obliger would pay $1,000 starting in the one case in late 2015, and then $500 per month, and they abided by the agreement through March of 2022. So the district court did not break those out into two separate, but rather said that is just one agreement, correct?
That's not part of any agreement from 2015, though. I mean, there's nothing to indicate that there's any consideration once we get to 2019. And by then, nobody's disputing that father is not having any parenting time in Minnesota with the children. So that there can not possibly be any finding of consideration. And I just think that if this court affirms the district court, if it allows Kylie to be ignored and not to have any kind of findings based upon this, you know, we're going to have the Wild West. And family law bar reads even non-precedential opinions. And they're going to read an affirmance as legitimizing the most short shrift given to whether or not extrajudicial agreements are fair and reasonable and whether they have to be supported by consideration. And so I ask the court, please do not go in that direction. Please follow the past precedent, which militates against any kind of affirmance in this case. It's going to be absolutely dangerous to have an affirmance in this of this decision. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your arguments and your briefing on this matter. It is taken under advisement. We will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory timeframe. Thank you both.